Welcome to the Off the Blur podcast. I'm your host, Eric Maynard, and I'm here to talk with as many authors as I can. So thank you for being here. Take the time. Enjoy the show. Reach out to the authors through the website, authorblurb.com, and learn more about them, and feel free to reach out to them. Off the Blurb, where readers and authors connect. So I'm here with Baron Brichard, and I'm actually excited because you have a load of books that just look to be interesting. It has me, like, literally I'm sitting there trying to clear books out of my way so I can start reading some of your books. So for those who are listening that just haven't had the chance to look into you yet, I appreciate you being here. Can you tell everyone a bit about yourself so that they can figure out how much they want to read you, and we can go into your books as well?
Absolutely, you bet. Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me. I know what a busy guy you are and what a successful podcast you have, so to be a part of it is really a delight for me, and I appreciate it. My name is Baron Brichard. Been at this for a while. I have my eighth crime thriller is coming out on September 12th. It'll be available ebook, hardcover, and trade paper all at once, which is kind of a first for me, but that's the way my publisher likes to do it. I've had the good fortune of being, well, I don't know if it's a good fortune or not. It is just the way it has been. I have been traditionally published all the way along, starting all the way back in the year 2000 with my first book, which was called Roadhouse Blues. And that one is the beginning of a series that features a PI, a former a retired cop in Southern California area. He moves to Hawaii. He lives on a sailboat. He charters his boat. He wants to redefine his life, which, of course, doesn't pan out the way that he exactly discovered or decided that he wanted, and ends up being a private investigator. There, it's a hard-boiled series. There are four books in that series. But the real surprise and delight to me was that that very first one, all the way back all those years ago, got on the LA Times bestseller list. No one was more surprised than I. And to have that happen with your first book is really kind of a shocker. And it was just a delight, and it's been a fun ride ever since. Since then, I have written a standalone called Rain Dogs, and then have begun a new series starting just a couple of years ago that features a small town sheriff in rural Oregon, where I now live, in the 1970s. So I have the opportunity now to, you know, not only explore my roots, which really are kind of rural roots, but to also revisit the 1970s, where I was just a teenager at the time, and now I get to revisit for purposes of being an author and relearn what I thought I was seeing as a teenager through teenage eyes and writing it as an adult. And I have to say, that has been a fascinating process. And coming to a new understanding about all the turmoil that really was going on and why my parents were so flummoxed by what was going on in society at the time. All of that has been very informative for me, and it's very, very exciting. The new book is called Reckoning. It's out on September 12th.
Right, which for anyone listening, the audio of this, it was a couple of days ago when this audio goes live. If you're watching the video, you get a preview of this conversation a day beforehand. So let me start off real quick with the one that's set in Hawaii,
Mike Krebs. I remember,
yes.
The first of the books is Roadhouse Blues.
Roadhouse Blues, yes. So, first off, when I think Roadhouse Blues, I'm thinking out in the West, I'm thinking Texas, Oregon, Oklahoma, kind of those, or even Montana. Mm-hmm. But I don't really think Roadhouse in Hawaii.
Well, it's interesting. I think it's always interesting to see how people take words and filter them through your own life experience and your own imagination.
Right.
Which is what makes writing so much fun to begin with.
Right.
In fact, the title came from a song by The Doors, by Jim Morrison and The Doors, called Roadhouse Blues. And The Doors, of course, were and are probably the quintessential Los Angeles rock band of the late 60s. So I mm-hmm. borrowed that title for that purpose. Jim Morrison actually figures into the storyline. And he's a character that I find very interesting. And there again, it dovetails into my life experience. Before being a writer, I was in the music business for a number of years, not only as a performer, but later as an artist manager and a record producer. So kind of been on both sides of the studio glass.
Well, that's interesting to know. I was going to say my ability with music is really non-existent. So I think my kids and my wife are the only ones that even want to hear me spit out a tune or anything like that.
Well, so, there's somebody, right?
There you go. I think it's just pity that they listen to me, but, you know, it is what it is. So with that, why'd you set in Hawaii then if you're taking a band's song that's, like you said, L.A., you spent a lot of time in L.A. before you went back to Oregon. So how does Hawaii fit into the story? And then how does the story actually start off so that if somebody wants to get into it, what do they expect to walk into?
Well, Roadhouse Blues actually begins in Catalina, in the island of Catalina, off the Southern California coast.
All right.
I was born and raised in Southern California, in Orange County, California.
All right.
And lived there till, gosh, I was mid-30s. My wife and I moved to Kona, Hawaii at about the same time that I was writing this book. And I thought I wanted to transplant my character to come along with me. for a couple of reasons. One is I wanted to put him on a boat so that he would be mobile and would be able to go anywhere that I wanted him to go. but also to give me an excuse as a writer to really delve into my own brand new backyard and do some research on Hawaii, and you know, not only to live in it, but to try to learn about it as a new transplant. So we kind of had two reasons for having brought Hawaii into the storyline. But Roadhouse Blues is primarily a Southern California story. The second book in the series is called Ruby Tuesday, a Rolling Stones song. I'd be
right.
I'm sure you're seeing the pattern forming already.
Yeah.
And that one takes place entirely in Hawaii, as does the rest of the series.
All right. So what is it that, what's the premise? Because there's a lot of PI books out there.
Right.
And I mean, literally you could throw a dart at a wall and probably hit a PI book. What is it about your PI book that brings out your character and the story that people want to read?
Well, I think two things. One is the storyline leans heavily on the music business.
All right.
And and in the case of Roadhouse Blues, leans heavily on the mythology that surrounds Jim Morrison and his mysterious death in Paris, France. And a lot of the odd occult kinds of musings that surrounded his life and his lyrics and his story, the story of the Doors, mm-hmm. that hovers around L.A. like a cloud. So it was a very fertile field to till for me, particularly because I knew quite a bit about it because I'd lived in it. But from that perspective, it was one of the, at the time, certainly one of the first PI books to ever be set in that world. And, you know, to be that steeped in rock music and to feature a real life rock god.
All right. So the book takes place during the 60s in that era? Or?
No, it takes place in contemporary times. So it's set in and around the year 2000 when I wrote it. So that book harkens back now a while.
Okay.
But it is set in contemporary times. The whole Mike Travis series is pretty, it's the early 2000s, mid 2000s, because that's, you know, it was just contemporary.
Right.
The new series, on the other hand, is entirely different. And I have to say it is, for me, it's been a great fun adventure to do something brand new and kind of take a little hiatus from the Mike Travis world and spend a little time with the new main character, Ty Dawson, who is a, you know, he's a cattle rancher and a very reluctant sheriff who was essentially conscripted to become sheriff because there was some lawlessness happening and the law enforcement infrastructure that existed at the time was sorely lacking and they needed some help. And now, Ty Dawson lends a hand and becomes a lawman.
All right. So now the Ty Dawson series, with that there, that takes place, I think you said, in the 70s out in Oregon, right?
Correct. And that is where I live now. I lived in Hawaii for about 15 years.
All right.
Moved here to Willamette Valley in Oregon back about 15 years ago. So I've lived here about 15 years now. You may hear cattle roaming around that may be lowing here shortly. My neighbor's doing some rounding up. So there's some dogs and cows chasing each other around out there a little bit. But it's the world I live in now. But there's actually a little different element to the 70s Ty Dawson thing that really, there are the cows now. that really informed the Ty Dawson series. And that was that when I started writing this, which was about 2017, which is the first book, the title of which is South California Purples. Again, another song title by the band Chicago.
Oddly enough, I know all these bands and the songs.
Oh, do you? Outstanding.
Hey, I grew up loving music, so.
South California Purples is definitely a deep cut, but I've always loved the title, and I thought that it fit the storyline. We won't go into that part of it at the moment, but what was happening in my life at the time was my dad, we had learned that my dad was ill, and the time was likely going to be short. You reprioritize how you spend your time together when you learn that sort of thing.
Right.
So I became really interested with just kind of going back to my teenage years. I'm the youngest of three. I was 13 in 1973 when the first of the books takes place.
Okay.
Vietnam War is raging. Lot of political unrest, a lot of turmoil. My brother, being a number of years older than me, was just graduating high school at the time and eligible for the draft. A lot of dinner time conversation about that and about warnings against drugs and all the hippie bad stuff that could lead you down the bad path and all of that.
Right.
But I was hearing all of that through the ears of a preteen. So as I was discussing those times with my dad, I had a brand new appreciation. Now being a grandfather myself, I have a brand new appreciation of the challenges of parenting and how challenging that must have been with the laundry list of surprises that were taking place in society in the early 70s that my parents had. The political world that was, you know, all over the place, a president in deep turmoil, just everything that could be chaotic was. And yet our childhood felt stable and fine, and then, you know, a duck moving across the pond, but a lot going on. So I got to research that, and I got to hear his take on that. And those conversations informed who my character Ty Dawson is, because he's a man in his early 40s in 1973. He's a simple man in a rural county. He wants to be, is a successful rancher, but that is what he wants to do. And to be drawn into everything that the Age of Aquarius was dropping in his lap was not exactly what Ty Dawson wants in his life. But we don't get to choose what happens to us sometimes.
Absolutely. Now, with that, so people have an understanding of the actual setting of it, because there's a good amount of people that are listening to this that are in cities that, like, when, even now that I live in a city, when I tell somebody I grew up in a town that used to have a single blinking red light that doesn't anymore, and that we had tractor days where the tractors would come to the school and you'd have backup, the only time you had backup, and literally our school was covered with fields on all four sides, people kind of look at you funny and go, well, how do you manage that? Or they don't they don't comprehend the fields on all sides, the you have more cows than people around your town kind of a thing. What is the environment looking like in the 70s in Oregon that people, I'm like me, I'm picturing wild, wide open spaces, 40 acres for just the cattle to run around and things like that.
Your mental image is spot on. The description of your the way you grew up is very similar to the way I grew up. It was a very small town in Southern California. At the time, lots of agriculture, orange groves and avocado groves everywhere. Everywhere there weren't cattle. And some of the, you know, some of California's larger cattle ranches were actually down in Orange County. The Mission Viejo Ranch, the Irvine Ranch, being two of the very, very large ones. And I grew up on horseback. I saddled my first horse. I was probably 6 years old. It was a pony.
Right.
You know, we get to
I was going to say you was a tall 6 year old.
Yeah, no. Well, it was a short pony and I was a normal sized kid. But it was horseback for most of my childhood. And I took it for granted because, you know, when you're kids, the childhood you grow up in is the childhood you have compared to what. So I loved it. And I look back on that with great, great fondness because that area has changed considerably. I don't think there's a cow to be found in the whole county. I'm not sure. But here in Oregon, outside of the major cities, outside of Salem or Portland, it is very rural and it's very agricultural. Still, one of the largest rodeos in the whole country is the Pendleton Rodeo in Pendleton, Oregon. Several that happen right outside my backyard. I live on a small ranch here in the Willamette Valley. All of my neighbors are either ranchers or are wine growers, grape growers. And it's very, very quiet and rural out here, too. So to look out my window when I'm writing the Ty Dawson series is always inspirational because it's the same view he enjoys.
So what kind of things does Ty get himself into? Like, let's start off with the first book. What's he diving into on that first book of the series? And what kicks it all off that's forcing him, besides just the rampant crime, what's forcing him to actually get into it other than protecting his own land?
I love that question. You know, nobody's ever asked me that question. Of course, you know, when you read the book, you know, right away, a reader would find out right away. But what informed that first book came from one of the early conversations I had with my dad, because I had an early memory of our small town being very, very up in arms about the rumor that the Hell's Angels were going to be coming through town on okay. their way northward. And all the adults were petrified about what that meant. Now, and the town I'm talking about, I'm not trying to be secretive. I grew up in San Juan Capistrano, mm-hmm. where the swallows come back every year. And it has always been kind of a gateway to the biker community, because it's right there along the I-5 freeway. And even back in the 70s and 60s, a lot of that kind of activity. So it was half cowboys and half bikers who oddly got along reasonably well, even in the bars downtown.
Huh.
But there was some nervousness that this was going to cause some trouble. And what informs South California Purples is twofold. One, there is a government roundup of wild Mustangs that is being that's taking place on BLM land, Bureau of Land Management, federal land, that has some naturalists very upset. Because they're not just being rounded up to go put saddles on them. They're being rounded up essentially to be used as rawhide dog toys and food, cat food.
Mm.
So not a happy ending for wild Mustangs.
Right.
So a little bit of turmoil begins as protesters move into town to try to put a stop to that. The bikers happen to be coming through at the same time, and smelling blood in the water, they are all over the protest. And now they're going to kind of do an Altamont kind of situation. And okay, we'll just be your security, which is pretty much the last thing they really actually do.
Right.
This is not a service organization. So the confluence of these two real world events, create more lawlessness than little Meriwether County was prepared to deal with. So they conscript Ty Dawson, who was an MP when he served in the Army, and they thought that they could draw upon that skill set and he could be of some service. And one thing leads to another, and trouble that they anticipated does in fact ensue.
All right. So what kind of character is Ty Dawson, in the sense of, is he one of these gruff kind of, I only talk when I have something I think's important, or is he kind of a easygoing, I'll tell you a story, but you better listen or I'll put you on your ear kind of a thing?
Well, he has a he's a little of both, actually, which is, in my experience, kind of the cowboy way.
Right.
You say a little and do a lot is kind of the thinking. But when necessary, if action is required, action you will get. Mm-hmm. And you'll get it rapidly, and you'll know right away which end of it you're on. Ty is actually, his ranch is actually a family ranch that is several thousand acres. It's an enormous cattle operation. It's what he wants to do. It's his life. He lives with his wife and his college age daughter and a bunkhouse full of cowboys that do the branding and the, you know, that back tie up on the day-to-day ranching operations. He has a curmudgeonly mid-60s experienced ranch manager who is a very crusty, I find him very amusing, old school cattleman. And that's who Ty is. He is singularly focused. He's a family man and he's a rancher. When he is called upon to serve the community as a lawman, then he puts on that hat and he treats that with proper respect and throws himself into it to the detriment of his ranch, actually. You know, they need him there, but he's made other commitments.
I understand. That's
the kind of guy that he is. And he is a take no prisoners, law and order lawman.
All right. So now Reckoning, I'm looking here. Reckoning belongs to the Dawson series. So, and that's the third of the series.
That is correct.
So let's go through this with the Dawson series. You have the second one, which is Fistful of Rain.
Fistful of Rain.
So what, I mean, that just brings up a lot of different images in my mind.
I'm glad. And you know what, like we were saying earlier, the words are, and should be, are supposed to be evocative. And the use of language is a beautiful thing. And
right.
I treasure that I get to write. It's a privilege mm-hmm. to be able to write and to have an outlet for it and to have a publisher that helps these works see the light of day. So I'm glad you appreciate the titles, because I always come up with the titles of my books first so that they evoke a mood and a setting for me.
And, all right.
And I also create a playlist of music that is equally emotive and evocative, and it is all that I will listen to while I'm writing that book.
Well, hopefully it's a long playlist.
Yeah, it'll be, you know, it'll be 15 or 20 songs, but they tend to be set in the time period, and they tend to be have something to do with the mood of the scene and the story trajectory that I'm trying to write at any given moment. And it keeps some guardrails on the story for me. You know, here we are living in 2023, but I'm writing about a time period with no personal computers and no cell phones. And, you know, fax machines are brand new, crazy technology. And it was a much simpler world. And I need to remember to remain there when I'm in writing mode. And I like the mood of my books to stay within the framework that I had in mind, hence the title, hence the song list. And Fistful of Rain is no different. That's actually a song title. It's a song by Warren Zevon.
That's one I have not heard of.
Well, it's kind of a deep Warren Zevon cut. But I always loved the imagery. And the Ty Dawson series, the way that I have plotted it out mentally anyway, is they are seasonal. So the first of the books takes place in the spring of 1973.
All right.
The Fistful of Rain skips a season and moves forward into, well, actually it doesn't. It takes place in the summer.
All right.
And that can be a wet and rainy time for us at certain mm-hmm. points in time. So Fistful of Rain. So the third book, the follow-up to Fistful of Rain, begins in the winter. So there again, try to use language and try to use just a format that is appropriate to what is going on in the 70s in the winter in rural Oregon. And I do try to ground all of these stories in something that has historical relevance in that at their core, I like to have at least one of the storylines be something that was actually going on at the time. And again, it helps ground the story for me as a writer that it can be easy to let one's mind wander and you get a little bit off the tracks. You can get a little bit off the tracks if you don't remember that you're in 1973, 1974, and what's on people's minds are a gas shortage and the Vietnam War and a president that is facing, you know, ultimate resignation, and there's just a bunch of junk going on that is kind of spooky.
Yeah, well, from what I remember of the 70s, you had, I think it was Nixon, which he was going through because there was Watergate, and at the time that was the biggest thing that ever happened in politics.
Yeah.
And I remember reading quite a bit about the Vietnam War and hearing about the gas shortages and things like that. So you have the first book starts off with the Hell's Angels and protesters and all this stuff going on into this rural community. Fistful of Rain, what's happening in that?
The second book finds that there's a commune of hippies that has moved into a ranch out in the boonies, and they are being accused by some of their neighbors of stealing livestock and causing other mischief, which may or may not be true. Ty Dawson discovers, because the people that are making the complaints have beefs of their own with these kids and aren't necessarily enthusiastic with having a bunch of, you know, long-haired pot-smoking hippies in their backyard, which is a threat to society at large, of course. And, you know, it's just there's a lot of upset in a small community. And again, it did something similar to that did take place here in the Portland, Oregon area. It was a very large, turned into a very large cult that actually caused some trouble.
Right.
So that's sort of at the center of it. But I like to use a tool that I refer to as a nested narrative. So I always like to have two or three different stories going on, often that don't appear to have anything to do with one another. But turns out that they do.
All right.
So the main drawstring for Fistful of Rain is the existence of this trouble that exists between the newcomer hippies and the established ranchers.
All right. Now we dive into Reckoning, your new book. And I can't picture who sang Reckoning, so...
Well, Reckoning, I thought, was a fun word for me. I borrowed it from a Grateful Dead album title.
All right.
My playlist during this book was peppered throughout with a considerable amount of Grateful Dead songs at the time. But what I liked about the word Reckoning is it has at least three different meanings that are germane to Ty Dawson's world. One is, as a cowboy, one reckons to do stuff sometimes.
Right.
And it's just a figure of speech. In another, another use of the word, of course, is that there is a great reckoning. There is a great judgment that's coming down where good will be sorted from bad.
All right.
And the third of which is the navigational use of the word, where are we going? And hence the term dead reckoning, where you reckon based on just the stars and the position of the sun.
Right.
So I liked using those terms interchangeably in the story, and I was careful to do so, and they are in there. For those of you who enjoy Easter eggs in your books, you can you can look for the word reckoning in there, because I was having fun with the language. But that story is the main draw is kind of borrowed from more recent history, whereby the federal government comes in and sort of interferes with a cattle rancher's access to water. Now, that actually happened a few years ago in the Malheur Wildlife Region here in eastern Oregon. And it ended up with the occupation of some federal land, and some people were killed, and it was a real mess.
Right.
I borrowed from that, and I placed part of that story or a similar story in the 1970s, because there was a similar story in the 1970s.
All right.
The B story is the apparent suicide of a Portland narcotics cop out at a fishing lodge in Ty Dawson's rural county over by the river. And what's that all about? Because it doesn't look like suicide.
All right.
So two stories that don't seem to have much to do with one another that might turn out they do.
All right. So now, how much of, because with your first book, your first series, not your first book, I'm sorry, your first series, there's three in that series, correct? Or was there four?
Four. There are four in that series, followed by a standalone, and then the Ty Dawson series.
Which you have three in this one now. That's what I was going to go to ask you is, do you see yourself carrying on with more stories with Ty Dawson? Is it going to be, do you have an end planned out, or is it just, let's see how far I can go with him?
You know, Ty Dawson has had the genesis of the character and the trajectory of the story have surprised me.
All right.
I thought it might be a standalone, but it wasn't. And there are so many more stories that have shown themselves to me that for right now, there's no end in sight. Ty Dawson essentially is kind of Longmire meets Yellowstone in the 1970s in rural Oregon. And it is, it's fertile ground to till for me from a imagination standpoint, but it's also easy ground to till because I look out my window at it every day.
Right.
And, that character, as I said, you know, he began with roots in my dad's story. But as he grows, as Ty Dawson grows, there are a lot of different facets to his personality that are great fun for me to sort of delve into. And I really like him, and I like his cast of cowboys and deputies that assist him in his job. I like the interesting cast of small town Meriwether County, which as a small town guy yourself, you'll recognize a lot of those people. They are kind of archetypes,
right?
Because they are archetypes.
Oh yeah,
and they really do exist. And I know these people too. So it's a lot of fun for me. And I see no end in sight.
Well, good. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm definitely looking forward to reading quite a bit more about Ty Dawson. And the likelihood is I have a feeling this might be a series that I get into and just keep going with. So
I hope so.
So, well, you know, it's an ever-growing library list of mine. So, and like I think I told you at the beginning, I'm looking at rearranging some of the books I planned on reading to slide your books in because I'm really just the book covers of the Ty Dawson series caught my attention. So with that being said, I could probably talk to you about all your books repetitively in details until I get the whole story of every bit of them, but I think it's best for people to actually go and read your books. Where would you suggest people go and find your books, find you if they want to ask you questions? Where do you prefer them to go?
I am on Facebook and Instagram, and I should be fairly easy to find on both of those things if you just look up my name, and it's Baron, like the Red Baron, Bircher. And join me, friend me, and we'll stay in touch that way, and I'll keep you informed on what's going on with the books, as well as what's going on outside my window. In terms of the books, a couple of them are on audiobooks. South California Purples is an audiobook. A couple of the Mike Travis's are also audios. They're all available in trade paper. They're all available on ebook. I'm sure there's some hardcover still floating around out there somewhere. you should find me. You can find me on any of the normal platforms, Amazon, Apple, Barnes and Noble, and your local bookstore. Please, your local independent bookstore. Go there first.
Sounds like a good idea. And if it's not there, you should ask the bookstore to get it for you so you can get it from them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
So with that saying, again, thank you for being here. And if anyone's wondering, there's a profile of you on authorblurb.com where they can find you, read more about you, see the books and your links, of course. So with that being said, I'm going to have you hold on for me just for another moment. But this is going to be the end for everyone else. And again, thank you very much for being here. I've enjoyed learning about your books and talking with you.
Thanks, Eric. It's been a delight. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. We enjoyed having you here, and I hope you enjoyed listening to the author speak as well. So now, take the time, subscribe, reach out to the authors, and go and buy their books. Let other people know about their books, about the show, and help grow both our communities. The authors would love to hear from you as much as I would. So thank you again. I hope you have a good day, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode.